Welcome. Let's join best-selling author Fred Kuhn as he interviews our next guest expert.
Welcome, everybody. Our topic today is why Netflix doesn't tolerate brilliant jerks. And our guest is Jim Schlexer. And Jim has a wonderful background, CEO of CEO Project. It's a firm that mentors fast-growth CEOs. He ran a technology business valued at $1.6 billion. He's done business in 28 countries. He has a latest book called Great CEOs Are Lazy. And you can read the rest of his bio on the website. Jim, welcome to Workplace Strategies.
Well, thanks a lot, Fred. I appreciate it.
So our topic today is why Netflix doesn't tolerate brilliant jerks. So the obvious question is, what's a brilliant jerk?
You know, we probably all know a brilliant jerk. And these people are just, they kind of dazzle us with their intellect, their ability to come up with creative answers, their ability to solve problems. And the problem is they're so smart that in a group setting, in a team setting, they kind of suck the air out of the room, and it's hard to really form as an effective team when you've got a brilliant jerk in the room. Maybe another way to think about these people, I mean, probably everybody in the audience is thinking through the people they work with, and I think I know who one of them is, but you probably say they're very high IQ. I mean, in other words, their intellectual competency is undeniable, and it is on display all the time. But their EQ, which is at least one element, is just their understanding of their impact on other people is extremely low. And so that ends up looking kind of difficult to deal with and maybe even rises with the level of being a jerk. So hence the term brilliant jerk.
So what kind of disruptive behavior do they exhibit within the company?
When I think about this, I mostly think about a team meeting where there's a bunch of people trying to solve a problem or work on a project. And one of the people in the room is a brilliant jerk. And at some point, you know, they may be able to sit on their hands for a little while, but at some point they're just going to give a big sigh and they go, look, I'm just going to tell you what the answer is. And they begin to expound on how they see this going. Now, the problem is they're right an awful lot of the time. The downside of it is it completely destroys teamwork. Everybody else feels demeaned. They feel like they're not good enough, they're not smart enough, and while they appreciate that we got to an interesting answer, the process is so damaging to sort of their psyche and their individuals that you diminish their commit to working in the future. I'm not going to be able to make a contribution, so I'm not going to.
Yeah, so resentment sets in, and when resentment sets in, then resistance sets in. When resistance sets in, team dissolves and individualism is capitalized, me first.
Yep, well said. And really that's what's going on. They're putting their intellect on display with the hope of getting sort of positive feedback on it, and they don't realize the damage they're doing by satisfying their own ego needs.
I mean, we all know that companies are built by people. Company couldn't exist without its people, and the better those people feel about each other and the task and the understanding of common goal, etc., the more productive, the happier the company, the happier the employee base. So we need these people, do we not? The ones that are brilliant? And this especially is in tech companies, isn't it?
Ideally, you want everybody pulling in the harness. And so even if you're not able to pull as much as the best of our team, I still want you pulling. Right. So the fact that you get suppressed through this individual's behavior is really negative because they can have an effect where, well, they're 10x, you know, smarter than the average bear. They can reduce the willingness to work or the willingness to engage for 20 or 30 or 40 or 50 or 100 people if they're really arrogant. Having said that, tech firms do tolerate these people probably better than others. You've got that brilliant programmer, that's incredible, super duper salesperson. And they do tolerate them. But the sacrifice that you're making for tolerating one of these people is your culture. You've now agreed that your culture can be abusive and non-teamwork and insulting at some level. And, you know, clearly some people are going to choose not to work in an organization like that.
If it gets bad enough, the other side of the coin raises up too, and that is, I love you, but you're gone. You're too disruptive. Because somebody at some point realizes that while they make a great technical or intellectual contribution that the overall team is so disrupted they have to let them go. Tough choice.
It is, but it's a culture choice. And I wrote an article about Netflix, and Reed Hastings is the CEO over at Netflix, is very explicit that we don't tolerate brilliant jerks around here. So he'd rather get rid of that 5 or 10X person because of the negative impact on culture in exchange for getting everybody in the whole organization in the harness and pulling hard as they're able, at least. So they are very explicit that they don't tolerate it as a cultural matter.
You've used that term harness twice now, and I will just share with you and the audience, my grandfather had two big, huge mules. One was Joe and the other was Dan. One day he said to me while we were out in the field plowing, he said, "If Joe dropped dead in the traces, Dan couldn't go anywhere." And that's kind of like working on the farm. We all have to work together, and that's my together lesson.
Yep, that's exactly right. That's exactly the model I think of when I say that word. So, yeah.
So what happens if a coworker is one and you are being put off by that worker and you recognize that others are as well? What are strategies that you can employ as an individual worker? Because I would think you'd hate to go up against them because they're so powerful intellectually and so perceived as valuable. But at the same time, what do?
You have to confront them ultimately. You know, to just allow it to occur is a bit of a victim mentality. So option one is to confront them and say, "Listen, Bob, we love your brilliance, but the problem is you kind of suck the air out of the room and you don't allow the other people to participate. So I would really appreciate if you could just sit on your hands. Let's see how the team does. And if we really get stuck, I'm going to call on you and ask you if you can help sort of solve the problem we're at." So that's sort of one move, is to just make them aware of the impact of their behavior. Now, if they've got extremely low EQ, you know, that won't do anything. But odds are they're smart enough to get that what you're speaking is true. So that's sort of one strategy, which is just explain to them the impact of their behavior. The other, I think, as somebody leading a meeting that they might be in, is to manage them very, very actively in the meeting, which is to say, look, when they begin to chime in, you go, say, "Hey, Bob, hold on to that thought. I'm going to let the group process work for a little bit, and then I'm going to come back to the thoughts that you might have." And so you actually suppress them a little bit in the meeting if you're able to do that. Now, not everybody can do that, I understand. But you don't want to engage them on an intellectual level. In that case, you're engaging them on a process, in the second case, and on a sort of a feeling impact basis. If you try to outsmart them, you're probably not going to get it done. So those are two basic strategies you take as sort of a peer. There are some other strategies to take if you're their boss, and we can certainly go into those if you'd like to as well.
Yeah, sure. Let's just take a minute, and we've got a couple of minutes left. Yeah.
So if you're the boss and you've got somebody who's a brilliant jerk, and sometimes you recognize it immediately, sometimes the feedback comes to you that this person is exhibiting these behaviors, you probably already realize that they have really strong impact in your organization and you don't want to lose them. So that's the yin and the yang of this issue. And that's why I say it's a culture and a hard decision. The first is to confront them, just exactly like a peer would. You say, "Hey, Bob, do you realize," now you're coming from a position of power, so it's a little more effective. You say, "Bob, you realize that you have a very negative impact on the balance of the team. We love your feedback. We love your impact because it's brilliant, but you just suppress everybody else. So we've got to find a way for you to engage that doesn't suppress everybody else's thinking." So that's one thought. The second thought is to isolate them. And that works. We talked a little bit about tech companies. They have an incredible super duper programmer that's kind of not fit for human consumption. They'll stick them in the corner, give them a computer, and as much as possible, they don't let them talk to humans because they're just not good at it. So there's an isolation strategy that could potentially be available depending on the job. The third strategy as a boss would be to send them to charm school, if you will. And hopefully you can engage a executive coach or a consultant that might be able to knock some of the prickly edges off this individual. I think at the end of the day, you probably can't get their EQ to go up, but you can get them to learn routines that will make it look like they're more considerate. And it will become a behavior and maybe become a trait over time.
Over time, it does become a trait. I can personally attest to that from my own personal experiences. And once you substitute those behaviors and practice those, they then become the innate behaviors that you use normally.
Perfect. And that becomes you. So that can work as long as they're committed to the change, I think. And then we get to the final one, and you know, we think about this as a four-box conversation. You know, people that buy into our culture and get it done, we want 100 people like that. People that buy into our culture but don't quite get it done, we're going to work with people like that. People that don't buy in but do make the numbers, people that don't buy in and don't make the numbers,
no, they're gone.
At any level, those are easy decisions. The problem is these people make the numbers, they get it done, and they don't really buy into the culture. And so those are, from a leadership point of view, those are culture decisions. What kind of organization do we want to have around here? Are we willing to trade the negative impact of that person for their performance? And said Reed Hastings made the decision at Netflix that we don't tolerate it. But there are obviously other places that do tolerate that trade-off.
There are. That's a fact. Folks, they bring to a close another workplace strategies and why Netflix doesn't tolerate brilliant jerks. And our guest today was Jim Schlexer. And if you want to know more about Jim, you can go to the guest bios section of the website and be sure and get Jim's book, Great CEOs Are Lazy. Jim, thanks for joining us today. Really appreciate it.
Thank you for visiting with us. We welcome your comments and suggestions and look forward to having you join us soon at Workplace Strategies.